The scripture today is Acts 17:15-34. The men who took Paul went with him to Athens. Then they carried a message from Paul back to Silas and Timothy. It said, "Come to me as soon as you can." Paul was waiting for Silas and Timothy in Athens. He was troubled because he saw that the city was full of idols. In the synagogue, he talked with the Jews and the Greeks who worshiped the true God. He also talked every day with people in the marketplace. Some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers argued with him. Some of them said, "This man doesn't know what he's talking about. What is he trying to say?" Paul was telling him the good news of Jesus rising from death. They said, "He seems to be telling about some other gods." They got Paul and took him to a meeting with the Areopagus. They said, "Please explain to us this new idea that you've been teaching. The things you are saying are new to us. We want to know what this teaching means." All of the people of Athens and those from other countries always used their time talking about all of the newest ideas. Then Paul stood before the meeting of the Areopagus. He said, "Men of Athens, I can see that you are very religious in all things. I was going through your city, and I saw some of the things you worship. I found an altar that had these words written on it, to a God who is not known. You worship a God that you don't know about. This is the God I am telling you about. He is the God who made the whole world and everything in it. He is the Lord of the land and the sky. He does not live in temples that men build. This God is the one who gives life, breath, and everything else to people. He does not need any help from them. He has everything he needs. God began by making one man. From him came all the different people who live everywhere in the world. He decided exactly when and where they must live. God wanted them to look around for him and perhaps search all over for him and find him. But he is not far from any of us. We live in him. We walk in him. We are in him. Some of your own poets have said, 'For we are his children.' We are God's children, so you must not think that God is like something that people imagine or make. He is not like gold, silver, or rock. In the past, people did not understand God, but God ignored this. But now God tells everyone in the world to change his heart and life. God has decided on a day that he will judge all the world. He will be fair. He will use a man to do this. God chose that man long ago, and God has proved this man to everyone by raising him from death. When the people heard about Jesus being raised from death, some of them laughed. They said, 'We will hear more about this from you later.' So Paul went away with them. But some of the people believed Paul and joined him. One of those who believed was Dionysius, a member of the Areopagus. Also a woman named Damaris, and some others believed."
Thank you, Sierra. Have you ever visited another country and tried to figure out what that culture was like? If there's another language spoken there, then there's an obvious barrier from the very beginning. But even if you seem to share the same language, if you travel to England or Australia, aren't you dealing with a radically different culture? Have you ever, in those situations, been caught in a faux pas? Something you intended one way, and then because of the way that culture is set up and you didn't understand the rules, you said something inappropriate. And maybe the others laughed at you because of that. If you never had the chance to visit another country, maybe you have established a friendship with someone from another country who has come here. I mentioned to you last week, or maybe it's been a couple weeks now, when I was growing up, I had a friend who had a mother who was Japanese. And when he came to my household, he took his shoes off at the door. And that was just one part of his upbringing and the culture that his mother brought over here to the United States. And from time to time in conversations, I get glimpses of how his childhood was different because of the influence of that culture. If you've ever had a friend who was close, who lived in a different culture, there are always interesting conversations. And if this individual has not grown up in the United States, there are all sorts of comments about things that we take for granted. But this is what happens when cultures come into contact with one another. Missionaries, of course, deal with this in a systematic way, trying to understand how someone else lives in a different part of the world. And if we are to carry on the task that Christ has given to us, to carry the gospel into all of the world, then we need to be able to study other cultures and to figure out ways that we can bridge these differences. Building bridges is a crucial thing in the missionary impulse. Some of you, perhaps on Sunday night, saw the film The Mission. This is a film that came out in the 1980s. It is of the missionary work of the Jesuits who went into South America. One of my favorite scenes is the first contact that the missionary, a man named Gabriel, his first encounter with the tribe of people who are living in the territory we think of today as Paraguay. It's a high, elevated, up above a falls. It's difficult to get to. He climbs all that way, and then he sits down in the middle of the forest. And there's all that anxiety. How are they going to receive him? The other complication is the missionary who went before him was martyred. And you can't understand why the Guarani, the people, martyred this missionary. Many around would say, well, they had their chance. Nobody else needs to go there. But Gabriel has the vision that it's still important to carry the gospel to these people. So he sits down in the middle of the forest, pulls out his oboe, and starts playing a beautiful melody. The Guarani come out of the forest and they gather around him listening to this music. But one of the members of this tribe walks forward, grabs the oboe and breaks it. Evidently, he didn't like the music or he didn't like the invasion of this outsider. And there's this wonderful scene where a little boy walks forward, picks up the pieces and takes them to Father Gabriel. And Father Gabriel tries to put it back together, but shows that he cannot. Now, from this point forward, the ice is broken. And now there's a chance to interact. And they take him back into their village, where he establishes a relationship with them. It's a beautiful image of how missionary efforts can begin. What is that first point of contact? And yet we live in an era of skepticism as well. I'm sure you've probably seen some sort of television episode or movie or read some novel that has portrayed Christianary missionaries in a bad way. And if you look back at our history and the history of Europeans coming over to the Americas, there's a lot to be ashamed of. That missionaries walked next to conquerors. And sometimes it's very difficult to distinguish the conquering from the sharing of the gospel. And the Europeans didn't understand how to build bridges and to stretch across these cultures, except in rare instances of someone like Father Gabriel, who is sitting down in the middle of the forest and letting the natives lead him to their village. If we look at our own tradition, William Carey in the 1800s was one of the first pioneering Baptist missionaries. He went from England to India, and he established a lifelong ministry sharing the gospel with the people of India. One of the things that Carey emphasized not long after being there was the importance of training the indigenous peoples to make sure that the Europeans who were coming in were listening to the people that they were sharing the gospel with. That there was a mutuality. Just as we've spoken of Paul in the book of Acts, in several instances, when he leads someone else to convert and to become part of the church, that it's important for him to receive the hospitality of that person. That Lydia immediately invites Paul, Silas, and Timothy, and presumably Luke, to find hospitality in her household. And then last week we spoke about the jailer who converts. And as soon as he comes to the gospel, he starts bathing Paul and Silas and tending to their wounds. It's important to receive hospitality from the other. And so images here of how to establish connections across cultures. One of the hardest things, one of the most difficult things in human existence, to bridge the differences that we have. It's a lovely passage here in Acts chapter 17. Paul has gone now ahead of Timothy and Silas. Silas and Timothy have remained behind, ministering in the new church that they've established there in Philippi. Paul's gone ahead. And if you know anything about Paul, you know Paul has wondrous dreams, a grand image of where he's going to go next. Many of us know that he sets his sights on the city of Rome, but that comes later. Now, though, he's in Greece. And where would be the prime place to go? Athens. You think about Greek culture and the legacy that we have. Even today, the names of Plato and Aristotle still have status, still have reputation. And Stephanie can tell you, at the University of Virginia, there's a lovely painting, a reproduction of the School of Athens, with Plato and Aristotle right in the middle of it, Plato pointing up, Aristotle pointing down. And many people still see that legacy as the start of our modern concept of the university. To be able to measure ideas and to weigh them and to critique them and to find the best way to understand the world around us. So Paul goes to the city of Athens. This is some 4 centuries after Plato and Aristotle, but their legacy is still there. Paul, presumably, is like a tourist those first few days. Just in awe of what's in the city of Athens. We think about the Parthenon. We think about all the other things to associate with the legacy of Greek culture. He travels around and he pays attention. He's observant. We're not fully aware of that until he gets into conversation a little bit later. Takes in the sights around the city of Athens. Then he goes to the synagogue. There's a synagogue here, and he can start on his traditional trajectory, starting in the synagogue, preaching about Jesus, then going out into the streets and preaching to the Gentiles. That's pretty typical. By this time in the book of Acts, we're used to that detail. But what's different here is someone walks up to Paul and tells him, "You now are invited." This is an honor. You now are invited to come speak before the Areopagus. This group of academics, and the writer of Acts tells us, they just sit around and think all day. The image of the modern day university. But also we realize a certain amount of privilege here. They don't have to work. They're there in the middle of the city just weighing ideas. Of course, they're going to love anybody who can come and present something new. Something that they can critique. Something they can measure and quantify and decide whether it's wanting or not. So Paul takes advantage of the opportunity. He walks there in the middle of the city, finds this group gathered around. How is he going to begin? This is a big question. If you are invited to give a short talk on what you think is most important in life, how would you respond? I'm not sure if you're aware that PBS sponsored something called This I Believe, and that they have invited numerous public figures over the last several years to offer short speeches of what they think is most important in life. It's a parallel to what Paul has been asked to do here in Athens. So how does he begin? He says, I've been walking around your lovely city. I've been taking in the sights. And he begins with a compliment. He says, I see that you are a religious people. Of course, if we know Paul, there's a certain irony there as well. He says, I see that you have all these temples and all these gods and goddesses. And I know that you want to cover your bases because I've even seen a statue to the unknown God. That is Paul's segue. He found the spot where he can build his bridge. He says, I know who that unknown God is. The God that you do not seem to know is the God of the universe. And this God is not confined to temples. This God is not confined to idols. This God made the universe. So that is his segue. He doesn't leave the Greek culture entirely behind at this point. He makes another reference, which is important too. For missionaries coming into cultures, you don't just make one nod toward the culture and ignore it. You think about Lottie Moon. I love seeing the very few pictures we have of Lottie Moon. You see a picture of her in her young life. She looks like an American. But after years in China, the picture we have of her in her senior years shows her in Chinese dress with her hair pulled back and the small glasses. She looks Chinese. It's very interesting to see how that transformation took place. And yet throughout all of that, she remained Christian. It's important to realize that as well. Paul here does not toss out Greek culture. He says, one of your Greek poets has said, making this allusion, that we human beings are the offspring of God, the gods, or God. And so he makes one more reference, and then he goes into explaining the gospel, saying God created us, God is going to hold us accountable, but God is not unreasonable here. God is going to share that accountability and share that judgment through a particular messenger. And that messenger is his son, who lived among us, who died for us, and then who was resurrected to show us that God is in control, offering newness of life, redemption, and a new creation. The book of Acts, though, tells us here is the sticking point, though, for the Areopagus, these academics who've gathered around. And it's not unusual, because if you were to stand up today on a university campus and start talking about the gospel, this would still be the sticking point. Did the resurrection happen? Even the Jewish fold divided over this issue. If you think about the Sanhedrin, the ruling council for the Jewish community, it had a two-party system. You had the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Sadducees said, there is no such thing as resurrection. And they were the ones who were quickly to condemn the early preaching of the apostles. But the Pharisees had started to entertain the possibility of resurrection. And so here, this presentation of the gospel divides the Areopagus. There's a group, the text tells us, they sneer and they turn away. Once they hear the word resurrection, they discredit everything else that the Apostle Paul has said. And there's still this kind of understanding today that if you're a true academic, if you're truly a smart person, then you just realize Christianity is a bunch of stories that we tell to make ourselves feel better. And so there's still a sneering crowd. But what's interesting here is not all of the Areopagus turned away. There were some who listened. The text tells us of only one by name, a man named Dionysius. And Dionysius, part of the Areopagus, starts to show that even an intelligent person can be a Christian. And there it says his influence leads to the conversion of others. And then the important conversion of a woman named Damaris. It's like we saw Lydia in Philippi offering her hospitality. Damaris here can offer her hospitality in the city of Athens. And so these are the individuals who start this church community in the city of Athens. And it leaves us with questions today. When we look at this passage and we look back at the world in which we live, we ask ourselves, if we were given this task, if suddenly we received an invitation to make a public address on what we believe, if PBS somehow got your name and you were given the task of giving a "This I Believe" speech, what would you say? Do we understand what we believe as Christians? Do we know where it is in the Bible? Do we understand how to relate that theology to the history of the church, what has gone before us, and the legacies of division that we still need to address today? Do we understand and can we give such an address today? Are we able to build bridges to the culture around us? These are important questions. Many of us, when we start thinking about this path, might be thinking, well, this is apologetics. It's a fancy word to talk about how do you build bridges to the culture around you. And Christian writers and preachers and teachers over the centuries have sought many different ways to engage in apologetics. Of course, in the 20th century, in a work that's made its way here to the United States and been influential, C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. If you get a chance to pick it up, it is a reasoning toward Christianity, trying to suggest how Christianity is a reasonable way of understanding the world. And then, in the last few years, a more recent writer, a man named Tom Wright, who's also in England, has published a book called Simply Christian. In this tradition of offering an explanation of Christianity and a critique of the culture around us. If you haven't had a chance to pick that book up, I strongly recommend, once again, Tom Wright, Simply Christian. It analyzes this tendency in Europe and the United States of privileging academics in a way that academics, as we've already said, are in opposition to faith. But Wright arguing, saying, even an intelligent person can come to the faith. And so we see individuals who are doing today what Paul was doing in his era. Some of you may be thinking, well, I don't relate to Mere Christianity, or I don't relate to what Tom Wright is writing in Simply Christian. Those things seem to be above or beyond me. That's a different culture. That's an academic culture. I live in different cultures, a farming culture or an industry culture or a managerial culture or different kinds of jobs and worlds and languages. There are different subcultures here in the United States. In each of those cultures in which you find yourself, there may be places for you to speak, for you to give an accounting, just as Paul has. Christ calls each of us to be missionaries, to speak in our own individual social circles, that we have been trained in a particular field, in a particular language, in a particular culture, and that is where we can speak. But then, let's return to those images where we were saying we live in a skeptical culture. And there's actually a term that's being bandied about today, toxic charity, that basically says that so many people don't understand what's going on in other cultures, and they are like bulls in china shops. You step into that culture, you presume to speak for those people, you say, I have the answer to life, and here I give it to you, and you ignore the true problems that those people are facing. Remember what we were saying about William Carey and how William Carey was saying, we need, as missionaries, first to listen. As we look at this story in the book of Acts, what is Paul's first impulse? He travels around the city. He learns his way around. And when he finally speaks to the Areopagus, he can make a number of references that are informed, that show that he has done his homework, that show that he has studied their culture, and that he cares. It's important for us also to realize that in this instance, Paul spoke at the Areopagus because of an invitation. This goes along with what we were saying last week about the jailer in the heart of the prison. He runs to Paul and Silas after the earthquake, and he says, what must I do to be saved? And it's after the question, after the invitation, that you as a missionary speak. And so as we look in our world today, as we interact in the many different cultures in which we find ourselves, may we study them closely. May we be attentive. May we have our ears open. And may we only go where we are invited. And in those moments of building bridges, the Holy Spirit will be able to use us. And we will truly be disciples of the Christ who calls us to go into all the world. We come now to our time of invitation and commitment, hymn number 680, All the Way My Savior Leads Me. This is a time for you, if you've never made a commitment to be a disciple of Christ, this church offers this opportunity for you to walk forward so that we can counsel you in that journey. Now also is a time for each one of us who have made that commitment to ask ourselves, are we being the missionaries that we need to be in our community? Are we building the bridges that we would be capable of building to reach those around us? Let's stand together and sing hymn number 680.